Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now in depth on what you should know about working with a financial planner. We're about a month into a new rule that governs the way you and your financial planner will work together. The Labor Department regulation requires that your planner act in your best interest. Ruth Hayden is here to talk about what that really means and to take your calls about when it's time to hire a planner, how much you should spend, how to get the most value. So I'd like to hear from you. Have you thought about teaming up with a financial planner? Have you had an experience with that that wasn't all that useful? What do you want to know about hiring the right financial planner and then how to use them in just the right way? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. As you know, Ruth Hayden is a financial educator. You can find out more about her classes and books at ruthhayden.com. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
This timing on this is perfect. Yes. We've had about a month of these new Labor Department regulations on financial planning.
That started.
I know they're going to roll out.
Until January 1st.
What's in effect right now? And then what's coming, Ruth?
They're giving some time to the companies to come into compliance.
Okay.
The new fiduciary rule... Carrie, it's long overdue. Nothing has happened in this system for four decades.
Wow.
And the retirement system has changed in that period of time. Back four decades ago, it was all about pensions. Now, Jane and Joe Doe have to manage their own investments if they want to be able to have a roof over their heads and be able to eat when they're 80.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a brand new world, and they have to put the money away themselves. And of course, then people look to experts. You know, to not have training in investments and then be able to pick the investments you want to go into or you think you should go into, that's hard for people that haven't had training. So this fiduciary rule is saying it's a little safer with this one. The rule is anyone who gives advice on investments and gets compensated for it has to follow three rules. Number one is they have to put their clients' needs above their own. It's kind of a no-brainer.
I know. What does that specifically mean? But we'll talk about that in a second. What are the other two regulations?
And if there are any conflicts of interest, either because I refer you to someone as a professional and I get money for that, or I recommend a product that I get more money in my check.
Got
because
it.
I picked that one.
Okay.
And the third one is absolute clarity about fees. And that has been a huge issue in this field that nobody will talk about fees.
So why?
How much... I have to believe that it's because they don't want the client to know, but maybe they don't know either. I tell my client it should be no more difficult. All these years I've been saying it's like an oil change. I want to know what the oil change costs, not just the oil, but the filter and the labor, everything. And even when my clients say that to professionals, the professionals still have trouble talking about the fees. Now they not only have to talk about it, they have to put it in writing. All of this has to be in writing.
So if you hire a fee-only financial planner, you probably are getting more information about the fees. No? Isn't that more upfront?
The two professionals, and you know you have someone who is a fiduciary by title if it's chartered, registered, or certified.
Okay.
Okay. The two things have to do with if you get feed like 1% and you pick low-cost investments, those folks aren't going to have to change much. In fact, those folks are a little disgruntled right now because there is going to be more paperwork.
Got it.
And they've been good. It's
right.
Like the kid in the classroom, the teacher's hollering at everybody, and the kids said, what did I do?
They're not the problem.
No, and they are, you know, they should be a little disgruntled because they've been following rules. On the other hand, they've also been lobbying to make this happen. To make the level the playing field so that everybody has to follow the same rules. And some people aren't making. Do you know that the Department of Labor estimated that this 2018, once it's in altogether, that consumers, middle class consumers, will save $17 billion with a B.
Wow.
In excess fees.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so,
a lot
so this
of money.
Matters to your own individual bottom line.
Yeah, and in my business where I work with people to educate them and help them cash flow, that's a lot of retirement security. So it has to happen. You know, there have been players in this field, and it has been the majority have misused the system and gotten by with things. They've acted more as salespeople than they've acted as professionals. You know, they have to hold that. You wouldn't go to a lawyer if you didn't think she was a fiduciary. You wouldn't go to a doctor. You wouldn't go to people. And in this field, we haven't had it, and it's been unsafe and too costly.
Is there anything, Ruth, inherently wrong with a financial planner recommending a specific stock?
Is there anything wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that as long as they can explain to the client why this is best for the client.
Okay.
Now there has to be a conversation. You know, we had talked before on this program, and I gave a list of questions to put on the website. And one of the questions was, are you willing to tell me why each investment is a good investment for me? Which means the planner, the advisor, has to know that it is and then be able to explain it. There are a lot of people in this industry now, the estimate is, that are going to leave the industry.
Wow.
Because they're not going to make enough money.
Okay.
They're not going to make anywhere near the amount of money. And they don't want to, what they call, hold people's hands. In other words, explain things to them. And the industry kind of is, if they need to leave, they should leave. You know.
Ruth Hayden is with us in the studio. We're talking about some new rules on financial planning. We'd like to hear from you about how you're thinking about whether to hire a financial planner. What are some of the things you want to know about that? What's your experience been so far with that? I mean, has it turned out that it's made a difference in your life because you have a financial planner working with you? Concerns? 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie NPR. I saw a poll here, Ruth, from Personal Capital that said that most Americans assumed their financial planners were putting their interests first. Let's talk about some of the other questions that you should ask to
Wouldn't you? Seriously, I would assume that, yes.
I assume
when you go
we're working
see your doctor,
together.
You
right.
assume the doctor's taking care of you first.
Right.
So that assumption is there. And they were not very good at answering questions. So the clients, the middle class Americans, had then to say, I can't push them. So I'm just going to assume it. And it's the one area that we just, if there's not transparency, and we're somehow have been okay with that. And it has cost us. Greed has run rampant. And it has cost us. So the good advisors now are going to have to step up and be willing to work with people, not just be intellectually, here's a product, let me explain it to you. Now, what questions do you ask to have a dialogue? We need to have a dialogue. This is the consumer's money, and the professional is giving advice on it. The professional has to explain herself or himself.
How about the individual, the family, the couple, the individual investors? Some of this responsibility should probably fall on you too, about as far as coming in informed.
I tell my clients the onus is still totally on you.
Okay, so what does that actually mean?
Well, that means that you have a series of questions and you say, are you a fiduciary? And what does that mean to you that you are a fiduciary? Let them explain it, right? Do you have any, you ask them the questions, do you have any conflicts of interest? But the one I mentioned a couple minutes ago, every investment, will you tell me why this is a good one for me? Why it works best for me?
And in those answers, Ruth, what are you actually looking for? I mean, what do you?
Well, you're looking first to see if the professional will answer you.
Okay.
I chuckled because I gave some questions to one of my clients. You know that I don't do the investing piece.
Yes.
I teach about it.
Yes,
okay.
Financial educator.
So I sometimes, some of the advisors that are listening to this program right now know that they've gotten questions from their clients. I've sent clients home with questions for their advisors. And one advisor looked at the list of four questions and said, you've been seeing that, Ruth Hayden. But
excellent.
You know, so my client was kind of chuckling about it, right? And there was a part that was humorous, but there was also a part that I'm the only voice, that's saying you need to ask questions.
Right.
Instead of, he should have said to her, you haven't asked these questions before. I'm really glad you're asking them.
Right.
Do you know that there was a statistic?
Not that, that Ruth Haven's out to get me.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it was totally, he's going to have to go take a class on how to win friends and influence people. There was a study that said in a crash, in a market crash, it's like 73% of consumers want to change their planner. That's because planners
exactly.
have been about product
right.
rather than relationship.
And people are uncomfortable, and so that's where the trust really gets
There's
tested
no trust.
In that moment. Right.
The people that have trust with their clients, they hold them.
Ruth, I want to say this, that the phones aren't working, which I suspected when I noticed that we were having some problems here. So if you have questions for Ruth at the moment, the phone lines aren't working, we'll figure that out. But you can tweet in your question, because I don't want you to miss this opportunity. It's at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. So here's Zach. He says, I'm low income with debt, no disposable income. How do people like me who need it get financial advice?
Well, that's such a good question, because of the internet now, we have lots of choices. There's a lot of competition. You can call up Vanguard, pick a fund, right? Or, you know, for 0.3%, that's 30 cents, they will actually give you advice on where to put your money.
Mm-hmm.
There are robo sites online where they ask you a series of questions and then they tell you where to put your money. There are all kinds of places. The simplest is to call a place like Vanguard, just because they've made it easy for new people. When I work with someone like in a class that doesn't have any money, I said, get $1,000 together and start a SEP IRA, whatever, if she's self-employed or whatever it is, scrape together $1,000, because they have a fund that you can start with that.
Okay.
And it's
wow.
a balanced fund.
Excellent.
It's called STAR. It's a balanced fund. There are other companies that if you put like $250 a month in your automatically, they'll start you, right? But you have to check on it and check on the fees. Vanguard, for example, won't have trouble with this because they have low fees. So they're going to be fine on their funds. But to get started, it's where can I scrape together money? Because that 70, 80-year-old, every day you wake up, you're closer to him. I'm telling this to our tweeter now.
Yeah.
Okay? You have to get money put away, whether you work an extra night, whether you start to accumulate it and then put it away and know that you've started. Once you've started, even with student debt, and even when you're working your way up in the career, you have to get started. The studies on the earlier you start, the difference of how much less money you have to put away over time is stunning.
Ruth, Alex says, went to see a financial advisor. First document shown was an exclusivity agreement. No explanation of my best interest. And Alex says, nope, I was out.
Good for you, Alex.
Yeah.
Let me explain what
he's
talking about.
Yeah, what's going on there? Yeah.
The companies don't want to do this. They don't want to be held accountable. They don't want to have the paperwork. They're afraid of lawsuits. They're afraid it's all going to be too transparent. So they have developed a contract. It's called BICE, Best Interest Contract Exemption. So this is supposed to be best interest stuff here. And they've said, we don't have to follow these rules. Will you sign this piece of paper? If you won't sign it, we can't help you. And if that happens,
wow.
you say, nice to meet you. The coffee was delicious, but I will be leaving.
I'm leaving.
You can't sign it. If the companies have to be that rigid and that fear-based, right, you don't want to work with them anyway. You just don't want to work with them. So you have to find somebody that'll do a workaround, because they're saying they can't help low-income people because they can't do commissions. There are workarounds. You can charge by the hour. But if they don't want to do a workaround, they want a blank check, you can't work with them.
Okay, in light of the fact that the phones aren't working, you can email us as well with your question. It's talk@nprnews.org, talk@nprnews.org, and we'll be keeping an eye on that. Here's a question, Ruth, from Lori in St. Paul. What's the best vehicle for college savings for my kids? My financial planner was suggesting a 529 was not actually the best vehicle and recommended a universal life insurance policy. Oh, talk about not putting your best interests.
Very good,
I'm just
Carrie.
Assuming that, Ruth.
Very
is that true?
Well,
I just blurted that out. Sorry.
It's a real high feed product.
Okay. Tell us why you immediately look with some suspicion on that.
I'm really surprised by that because the 529 is the college vehicle, and there are some really good programs. There are states that have really low fees on their programs, and they really work well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put money in, whatever, it's like almost like a Roth. When you pull it out, there is no tax on whatever it has grown, as long as it's used for college. It also has a versatility of being able, you can change the name on the policy. Say that kid decides not to go to college,
uh-huh.
and you say, well, I'd like to go. So you put your name on it and go to college.
Does it always have to be used for higher ed?
It does.
Okay.
It does. They actually came up, they changed the rules, I think now it's about 2 years ago, where you can actually do computers and stuff for college.
Okay.
You know, the equipment
yes.
that you need. But a universal life policy is high feed. It's a high feed product. That would be suspect under this new rule.
Colin wants to know on Twitter, what are the signs of poorly managed mutual funds, or how could an investor research those funds to better ensure financial growth?
Oh, these are great questions.
That is a really good
question.
We're
getting good yeah. questions without phones.
I know, but we would love to have the phone,
yeah.
so they're working on it.
Yeah. Morningstar.
Okay.
You can check Morningstar, just Google
it,
and
they
will, they'll rate service for the okay. mutual funds. You're looking for a couple of things. You're looking for what has happened highest and lowest over 10 years. That's what I look for. So look at a 10-year span, and what is the highest it's been? What is the lowest? That's your checking out the volatility, okay? And then you need to check fees. What are the fees? The fees are huge, and, you know, $17 billion?
Yeah, right. That tells you. And when you look at the initial
percentage. And it's only on retirement money. It's not on other money. It's just retirement money.
When you look at that initial percentage, you think, well, that doesn't seem that large, except you have to think about the way that builds.
Year
and how
after
much,
year
yeah.
after year after right. year. So the 529 plans, back to that question, are really the gold standard in college.
Okay. So a question here, since we talked about how to tell whether a mutual fund is a,
mm-hmm.
good,
yeah.
is a good mutual fund, how about a rating system for financial planners themselves? Is there somewhere you can go to figure that out?
Well, you can go online, something called BrokerCheck. FINRA, F-I-N-R-A, runs it.
Okay.
And you can check. There are other places, too, but that seems to be the most solid. And to check what their history is. I get comments like, I didn't understand a word he said, but he's supposed to be good. And I said, you would never have that standard for your therapist. You know,
or your mostly your doctor. Or, right.
Yeah, you would never have that standard. You know, so one of the things I've been concerned about all those years is how low standards are for financial people. And we have to change that. We have to raise it. This fiduciary standard is now the gold standard.
Okay.
And that's like A+. It used to be something like C+. You know, it was suitable. As long as it was suitable, close enough. It's like, that's close enough. It went. But we have to raise our standards. We have to learn enough so that we can ask questions of these professionals. Just like when you go into your, you know, when I go to my doctor, I go in with a list. Right? You go in clear and you know what you want to ask and you wait to get an answer you can understand.
Ruth Hayden is with us in the studio and we're talking about the rollout of some new rules for financial mm-hmm. planners. But we're also taking questions about how to hire a financial planner, when it's time, mm-hmm. some kind of standards that you should use for your own investing and looking at whether you need a financial planner. I'm going to ask you about that, Ruth, in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
We are having some phone problems here, unfortunately, because I knew we'd get a lot of calls on this. But reach us in a couple different ways. You can email us at talk@nprnews.org, and we're looking at that and taking your questions in. And I'm on Twitter. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. So Aaron says, cost and how much money we should have to hire seems more for baby boomers than millennials with student debt, no assets, living paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. I mean, is Erin at this point in her life someone that you would say, oh, she really needs a financial planner, or there are other ways to get this investment information, but you ought to be thinking about it?
The most important thing for Erin and other millennials is get into the market with something.
Okay.
Okay, period. So if there's a 401k, if there's a 403b offer, depends upon whether you're profit or not profit, get in there. If you don't know what to pick, pick a what's called a target date fund. And they will allocate
target date.
Is
okay.
that about?
Not the company
not
target.
Not the company.
Okay.
This is, they're targeting the date when you think you're going to need the money. And they usually set them up for when you're going to turn 65. And I tell my clients, this is the only time in their life they can pretend that they're 10 years younger, right? Because they get too conservative too fast. So they can pretend, you know, that they're 55.
And you're saying that because...
Because I don't want them to get... They end up
too
in all bonds.
Okay.
Even when you retire... We should talk about this sometime, how to set this up. Even when you retire, most of your money still has to be reaching to be covered for inflation and taxes. So you have to be in equities. Back in the old days when people died young, they went into CDs and bonds as soon as they retired, which those do not keep up with inflation and taxes. And if you're going to have a 20 to 30 year vacation, that's retirement, right? You have to keep growing that money. So where to put it and what to do with it, that goes ongoing. A millennial needs to be, if she can handle the volatility, she needs to be in like 70-30, 60-40. And she needs to get into a target-based fund. They will decide where to put it, and then she'll be diversified. He'll be diversified. Just put it in. And almost all the 401k plans now have a target date. Fix the target date to your life.
Okay.
So set it for when you're 70 or 75.
And then just contribute to it.
Yeah, just keep putting money in.
Consistently.
Then
right?
as you get older and as you get more money, you can get more sophisticated and decide to really come up with a plan and go to someone for a plan. But just to get started, just to get in that market is critical for millennials. We have to make this easier.
Ruth, here's Mrs. Headland's class on Twitter. She says, I've been teaching personal finance to high school students for 10 years.
Oh, I love it.
What are Ruth's top things for a high school student to learn?
Oh, I love
wow,
it.
Wow, this is good. You should go
Mrs.
talk
Headland
to the class sometime.
Good. This
I know.
Is good. This is good.
Mrs. Headland's got it going on.
Well, to teach the principles of investing, like diversification, what does that mean? You don't put all your eggs in one basket. They need to know what that means because if there are people in her class, just like there are adults out in the world, that they're looking for that one home run, right? I'm going to pick it. And it's supposed to. I have someone that just bought silver 4 years ago, said it was going to go up 250%.
Oh.
Right? You know, you can't go for a home run. You are going for growth, steady growth. So diversification, spread it around. Dollar cost averaging, put it in frequently, put the money in frequently, small amounts frequently. That's what makes you money over time.
Okay.
Right? The concept of compound interest, which is Einstein called the magic of the universe. It just grows, even if it goes up and down, it grows, right? And the difference between equities, stocks, and bonds, and what mutual funds are. You know, mutual funds, if we can get the fees decent, and they're good now for most companies. Even BlackRock came way down. They're trying to compete with Vanguard.
Uh-huh.
It's fabulous,
yeah.
Right? But mutual funds allow the diversification without us having to have a couple hundred thousand in dollars to get diversified individual stocks. They give us the same thing in a package. It's safer.
Ian says, again, with student loan debt, he says, how am I supposed to start investing, saving, if my school loans are forcing me to use all my savings to pay tuition?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he sounds like a fairly young guy,
yeah,
and he's going to benefit greatly from the compound interest you were just talking about. a tip for scraping together enough money to get going on this and then, Ruth, to get consistent about it. What do you think?
Well, if he has a job, which he probably sounds like he doesn't, where he could start to contribute to the match.
Okay.
That won't kill his check completely. But do check what his job has.
Okay.
You know, because
so
that's
your company
the easiest,
has a match.
That's the easiest thing.
All right.
And go to the match. That's like free money. If they give a 5% match, for goodness sakes, go to 5%. And then do everything you can to work around it to create that and to make sure you hold that. You know, it's interesting, and I have such compassion for the millennials who are starting out with the student loans and trying to figure out how to get a life and how to get out of the parents' basement.
Right.
And then I'm saying to them, come on.
Hey, right.
You have a 70-year-old out there that needs some help. But the sooner they get started, even with just a few dollars, right? They'll never regret it.
That's exactly right. You don't look back and say, wish I hadn't put my money there.
No, ever. You go,
in a consistent kind of way.
How did I do that?
Cindy online, Ruth, says, I'm a baby boomer with a substantial portfolio with a planner at one of the large planning firms. I'm so tired of paying the thousands of dollars I'm charged for fees, and I'm considering going to a fee-only planner to review and perhaps move some or all of my portfolio to low-fee, she says, Vanguard index funds. What do you think?
It depends upon where she is in her life. The two things that planners give you, one, they give you expert intellectual knowledge about investments. Mm-hmm. They have misused that a bit, but they give you that. The other thing they give is emotional stability. Most people will say, you know, could you handle a crash? Oh, yeah, no problem, right? But then when you ask them about assessing risk, they say, I don't want to lose my money. And so the purpose of the planner is to give you good advice and, two, to hold you steady when the market is doing flips and you're going, I'm going to lose all my money. And the planner says, no, this is just part of the process. We've planned for this. This is how we planned for it. Let me explain to you what our plan is. Again, that's the purpose of a planner. Okay. So I would go back to the company that she's with and find out if there's any way to lower her fees, whether it's the fee inside of the product or the assets under management fee. The standard in the industry is 1%. There are companies that cut that down when you can accumulate significant money, and there are companies that charge more than that. So it's important to know what that fee is. So I would go to them first, and then I would go to maybe call Garrett Financial Planning Network and hire by the hour a CFP through them to say, will you evaluate my portfolio?
You said Garrett Financial. Yeah. Okay. Because you can hire people by the hour.
They're CFPs. There aren't very many because they don't make as much money. Mm-hmm. But you can go in for either a second opinion. They'll do a plan for you. There are some good ones.
Can you suggest what's fair for a fee only? I mean, what should you pay for a service like that?
You mean like hourly?
Yeah.
Well, if it's hourly, it's going to be somewhere around $200 an hour.
All right.
Fee only, the problem with that phrase is it can mean hourly, it can mean a set fee,
and it can be a percentage. Too. Right.
So you have to know what they mean by that.
Okay.
When they start using the word fee only, what they're saying is they don't like commission. You know, how the commissions get in there. And there can be front load commissions, there can be ongoing, and there could be backload commissions. So you really have to find out. The commission market is pretty convoluted. So she just needs to get clear about the fees and probably get a second opinion. Again, you know, the companies are really getting flexible here and saying, we can help you with a lower fee and we can give you this kind of help. Vanguard has, you can work with a person. I asked them, I called a couple of companies and said, what do you have? What's your programs?
Yeah.
And they said that for that same 0.3%, if you have, I think it was 500 or more, 1,000, then you can actually get a person that you can call back.
Yeah.
I say, what if I don't like the person? Because I would assume that a lot of them are youngins.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know. I suppose you could change. But anyway, the point is you have to start to ask. There's a piece in here that goes to the responsibility of the consumer. Mm,
which is what we talked about at the beginning here. You have to be informed.
You have to do research. You have to know the questions.
Which isn't an entire Saturday of research. It's just reading some information about this and being prepared.
And then having the courage to ask questions when you go in.
Ruth from Paul, who says, my girlfriend's company was recently sold and the new investment owner doesn't offer 401k. Any suggestions if she should leave her past investment or roll it over? And he says, as of July 1, she stopped putting money in the 401k. So she wants to remedy that pretty quickly. So what should she do?
Well, that's a big question. That's a perfect question for today, because one of the things they're going after with this fiduciary are rollovers.
Okay.
And so they're saying, you know, many of these people have put the rollover money in a high fee, like an annuity, right? And so they're saying, be really careful of rollovers. So it used to be a no-brainer when 401k fees were very, very high till they came down. Uh-huh. Just get it out of there. You know, get it to another company and get it out of there. Now it really has to be looked at carefully. So she would be looking, rolling over. It's called a rollover IRA, right? She wants to look at a company where she can maybe get a little help on where to put the money, and it's low feed.
Something, I know we've been talking a lot about Vanguard, but something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Fidelity has some good stuff. Schwab has good stuff.
Good.
There's, but to find a company where the fees are low, there's not a big, and no one is talking about REITs or annuities or some high fee product, just simple, low cost mutual funds.
Darren on Twitter says, Ruth, my high school age son started working. Should I get him started in a retirement plan now? Or wait till he's out of college? He'll be a millionaire by the time he's 30 if you get him going.
That's
now.
That's such a good question.
That's good.
That's such a good question. If somebody earns money, they can put money away.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just I don't want to go too far into this because this could be a whole nother show. He could put the money into a Roth. And the Roth's rules are you put it in and then it grows and there won't be taxes at the other end of it, right? The problem with that is that the rules for the Roth have to last for decades.
Okay.
But that would be what I would do if I were Darren.
Not into a college fund or something?
Well,
or?
You can do. Well, the Roth can be used for that.
Okay.
Because when I said the 529s act a little bit like the Roths, mm-hmm. except the Roth doesn't have an agenda on it.
Okay.
So you can put Roth's money is perfect. Just make sure that wherever it goes, it's in a balanced fund. If he might use it for an agenda like college, like not 20 or 30 years from now, make sure it's in a balanced mutual fund so it doesn't have such high volatility.
Ruth, quick one. We have a minute. How important is CFP certification? She says an advisor was recommended. He's paid by salary, not commission, but he's not a CFP.
I really like when there's a certified, registered, some kind of a title that says where they've had to sign papers, say, I'm a fiduciary. So if maybe this person that she really likes would be willing to sign a paper to this fiduciary rule and say, I will do those things.
Ruth, great to see you.
Good to be here.
Hey, and apologies to everybody that the phone lines weren't working. I think we covered a lot of ground here,
really well.
Ruth.
Good job.
And good job to you. Always good to have the information here. I will retweet some of these questions and maybe some answers to this. Ruth, thank you. I'll see you next time.
I'll be here.